This is a Stimulus Network podcast.
Hello and welcome to Eureka Nerd. I am Will, and my favourite addition to our Animal Crossing island is probably the telescope, that and the Kung Fu chicken.
And I'm Leah, and my favourite addition to our Animal Crossing island is all my extremely snazzy outfits.
Special shout out to Leah's friend Sam, who sent a witch costume in the Animal Crossing post this afternoon. It's great.
I did squeal when I opened it.
But hello, yes, welcome to the show. We are still here. We are still recording through lockdown because, well, we record at home and that's where we are now all of the time. This episode is filled with stories that have come out over the last week or two that struck me, and I hope will appear to you as well, as things which I was pretty sure we already knew. This is all allegedly new research.
This is one of the fun things about science and research, is you can be approaching something in a different way, and therefore reinforce the images of the world you had already, or you can be collecting data to confirm things that people just sort of instinctually know make sense. Because sometimes if you don't have the figures to back it up, some absolute pedant will go, where's the science though? And now on these subjects you can go, here it is.
Ta-da!
First one that we talked about an awful lot while I was doing A-level geography back in 2007. The more paved space you have, the more flooding you get.
And apparently this is news to and from Johns Hopkins University, that for every percentage point increase in roads, parking lots and other impervious surfaces that prevent water from flowing into the ground, annual floods increase on average by 3.3%. Which, yeah, you pave over surfaces and the water can't get in, the water doesn't get in, and you get flooding.
The thing that's really new about this one is the specificity of that number, that 3.3%. which the researchers have achieved, in contrast to previous studies, which, you know, looked at one stream at a time, so they weren't very easy to generalise. This research team did a big maths approach. It's probably not big maths, it's probably just maths. But they did maths with lots of studies at once.
And Annalise Blum, first author of the paper, does say that due to the large variability in annual flooding, it's difficult to isolate the effect of urbanisation. Combining these large data sets, doing the maths that you mentioned, with both time and space dimensions allowed us to tease out and calculate the magnitude of the effect. And she does also offer a warning. If you're looking at a basin that you expect will urbanize in the next 5 years, these findings will give you a ballpark estimate of additional flooding to expect due to that urbanization.
And it is a typical side effect of increased development, is more people will be concentrated into urban areas as opposed to being spread out across rural areas. I think it's interesting that they don't mention, it's just sort of changing approaches to building. So as opposed to tarmac and paving having different systems and ways that allow water cycling to continue happening in a more natural way, which are an option and have been an option for a while, but people don't exploit to their full advantage. Maybe now that they have a number, it will persuade a few more people to make some changes.
That does remind me, actually, that the title of it, More Pavement, More Problems. Sure, it's a fun joke on the Notorious B.I.G. song, but it does, in its own title, kind of shift the blame from roads, from car parks, to pavements where pedestrians and people are.
I think that is completely unintentional. Like, they're thinking paving in general. Technically, a road surface is a pavement. It's just not a sidewalk, you know?
I can't shake the feeling that this is going to make someone somewhere go, ah, okay, so we don't need pavements.
Yes, and that person will be an absolute prat, but
as we've already covered from our introductions, there's always some pedant out there who's willing to be wrong in front of everyone.
Often several of them.
And do you find that they all typically tend to be men?
The ones who are that determinedly wrong and able to take it on other people? Typically, yes.
This leads on to our next unsurprising story from the British Medical Journal, that men pose more risk to other road users than women. And this is, again, unsurprising, but we do have a number to put to it now, and they do clarify that, as well as just being men generally across the board, men in heavy haulage lorry trucking jobs are more unsafe as drivers and two other people on the road compared to women in the same job.
Now, the thing that we already knew before this is that insurers frequently report and used to be able to give lower rates to women because of the fact that men are more likely to make a claim on their policy than women are. They make more claims, so they get in more accidents, they have more trouble with their vehicles. This has looked at the impact on other road users as opposed to on the driver themselves, and the number of fatalities as opposed to the number of just accidents that different vehicle categories get in per kilometre driven. Cars and taxis associated with 2/3 of fatalities to other road users. This makes sense because cars and taxis are most of the things on the road at any given time. Once you've compared that number per unit of distance travelled, lorries and buses are associated with 5 times the number of deaths per kilometre as cars.
And there's an element of intermingling with pedestrians there as well, because cars and taxis are more often found in close urban environments. You can't fit as many lorries in there, and it's geared more towards cars. So where the people are on foot, the more likely they are to be hit by a car, it's more likely to be cars doing the hitting. In urban areas, 173 deaths over the entire study period were pedestrians, and that policymakers should ensure that measures to discourage car use don't inadvertently shift from cars to motorbikes, which were also not any safer.
Yeah, motorbikes are about 2.5 times more dangerous to other road users than cars are. I'm sure motorcyclists out there will want to argue that that's because other road users aren't very careful of them, which I'm sure is a factor. But also, it's very easy to fall off a motorbike, especially when it's raining, which it does usually do in this country. They analysed the data by gender as well and saw men posed a significantly higher risk to other road users for 5 out of the 6 vehicle types they were looking at, 10 times higher for motorbike riders, 4 times higher for lorry drivers. And lead researcher Dr. Rachel Aldred points out driving jobs tend to be male-dominated and suggests that a more equal gender balance in these jobs would help. I'd be really interested in research on why male lorry drivers are more likely to cause an accident than female lorry drivers. You know, are they more likely to drive tired? Are they more likely to drive fast or recklessly?
Like, we've got the end result of that, but what's the cause?
Yeah, it's impossible to actually fix it on a bigger scale without knowing what it is. And I would assume, as with many, many problems with men, that it's something in the way that we socialise boy children as we're bringing them up.
And continue to socialise them over the course of a job. If it is that male-oriented, that male-dominated field, then it could be acquired behaviours as well.
Mm.
But we don't know. Someone's going to have to do some more research to come up with the obvious answer to that question too.
Yep.
I'm talking about socialising boy children, we can go on to socialising children more generally. Modern children probably have spent a lot of this lockdown in the same way that I have, indoors, eating snacks and playing video games. That's also how I spent a lot of my adolescence. Culturally speaking, I think it's how a lot of people spend their adolescence.
Yeah, I mean, having grown up in the 90s and seen the transition from kids frequently playing out on the street to kids primarily playing indoors, and knowing that a lot of that is driven by parents' perception of risk rather than children being terrible people, as is often the implication by these things, it does seem like the trajectory is continuing, and we'll see fewer and fewer kids doing anything but being on the internet in their spare time. And this study finds a correlation between higher body mass indexes at the age of 14 in children who were on video games more aged 5. They also found that there was some correlation between sugar-sweetened beverages and irregular bedtimes. So don't go smashing your kid's PlayStation just yet.
Yeah, this big question of what does a video game intensive lifestyle do to a kid? The answer is, generally speaking, a bit of an increased chance of ending up a bit overweight. So does high calorie drinks and not getting enough sleep. And if that seems like a kind of obvious answer to a kind of obvious question, then yeah, hello, welcome to the show. And what about grown-ups who lead healthy lifestyles, I hear you wondering. Are they more likely to be healthy in the long term? Yeah, kind of.
Now, the headline asks which healthy lifestyle factors are associated with more years free of chronic disease. They are specifically looking at chronic diseases which are associated with age and lifestyle factors. So type 2 diabetes, coronary heart disease, stroke, cancer, asthma.
And they looked at over 100,000 people to come up with the answer of exercise moderately, don't drink excessively, and don't smoke. And you should be at a better chance of not getting any of the above. So be healthy to increase your likelihood of living healthier for longer.
It doesn't mention anything about income or access to healthcare or any of that kind of stuff, which I always find a little bit suspicious in things that are saying you should maintain a BMI in line with this BMI thing, even though BMI is like nonsense. It always has been nonsense. It is known that it is nonsense.
Yeah, it's just kind of a measure of physical dimension, regardless of like internal health, or if you are incredibly ripped from doing so much exercise that you put on tons of muscle weight and end up kind of now obese.
Yeah, those things will say that you're obese even if your body fat is actually dangerously low, which is wild.
Mm. The intended takeaways from this paper of be healthy to be healthy, they do stand.
I'm just extremely leery of linking weight and health directly.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, they've got combinations. If you're so fat that it's like interfering with your mobility, that is probably going to cause you health problems, but it's just as likely to have been caused by health problems in the first place. Ascribing any moral dimension to people's weight is hideous. And none of anyone else's business.
And you mentioned the economic dimension there, so let's link that into new research from Princeton University alongside Woodrow Wilson School of Public Health and International Affairs. And I'm summarizing from the headline here. It sucks to be poor generally.
But it sucks more when you're surrounded by rich people.
Yeah. Or as they put it, poor people experience greater financial hardship in areas where income inequality is greatest.
Which puts me in mind of one of those collections of like egregious mismanners letters. Included one from someone who was saying that they lived in a nice part of town and these kids from the rougher, poorer part of town would come and trick-or-treat around their nice neighbourhood and they're just trying to get something out of us. And it's like, yeah, it's Halloween, it's trick-or-treat. That's kind of the point. Like, if they go trick-or-treating in their own neighbourhood, they're not going to get a lot because everyone's skint. So yeah, they're going to come to your house. Share the love.
Of course they're trying to get something out of it. It's the candy that you've got to give to people when they come to your house trick-or-treating, you lunatic.
Yeah, I mean, she was just really upset at the concept of...
giving things to poor people?
I guess so, yeah, that seemed to be it.
Oh boy, she's going to hate when she hears about charities. Or Jesus. And this press release highlights that the poor people may need to put themselves at risk of coronavirus by venturing out in public transportation to get supplies, and that many people are relying on friends and families to support them, and that the health crisis that we're going through has disproportionately affected people working in what have been termed in the UK as low-skilled jobs, and that we're trying to evict people or bar them from entering the country because they would end up having, and now the entire country relies on them, as it always has, but we realise, oh wait, we need working-class work to happen to support society.
We need people to stack the supermarket shelves? What do you mean? What do you mean the CEOs of a big supermarket isn't the one who's actually creating the value in the job?
And it turns out when that is happening in the same place, the same physical dimension as where rich people are incredibly rich, think of most cities, most capitals especially, look at London, look at New York, San Francisco, areas where rents have spiraled way out of control, but they still need people to come and work in the shops and work in the offices and grease the wheels that keep society moving.
This does highlight that one of the issues for people with low incomes who are living alongside richer people is that shame makes it hard to reach out for help, makes it hard to trust your community.
So what we should do, and this is just my interpretation of that, is we should start shaming rich people who have not helped.
We certainly are in the habit of doing that anyway.
See also last episode where we kind of maybe suggested that you go smash up Jeff Bezos's car. Maybe a little.
Well, yes, I was going to I was going to reach out to Jeff again through the podcast and say, Jeff, why are you asking for charity to bail out your staff rather than just paying them sick pay? You are the richest man on earth, Jeff. You can afford it. You have enough money to fund all of the research that's needed to sort out vaccines so that we can all just go back to living our lives. And in the meantime, you could be paying people properly and you wouldn't even get poorer.
And this goes for Richard Branson and Mike Ashley in the UK as well. It seems like being a just sort of filters up, doesn't it?
There does seem to be a threshold of wealth where you completely lose compassion for other human beings.
It's kind of... We should come up with a name for that. Like the Acme threshold, where if you go past this, you turn into a cartoon villain.
Yes.
But now is the time for us to plug our Patreon.
To be fair, we're not billionaires, are we?
We're not heirs.
No.
I'm furloughed.
Yeah, exactly.
But if you would like to help support the podcast, then you can find us at patreon.com/EurekaNerd. On to the next story. Some more obvious health news coming to us, this time from Duke University, who have found that cleaner air is easier for children to breathe. Asthmatic children specifically benefit from having clean air filters in their bedroom to stop anything that would trigger their asthma. So you clean the air, and the people who react to unclean air don't get sick.
And this is the first study to document that physiological improvements occur in children's airways when air filters are in use. So instead of just not having asthma flare-ups, the actual overall lung function of the children involved in the study improved during the study. And even when they weren't in their bedrooms with the filtered air, they were less likely to have trouble with their asthma symptoms, which is pretty staggering.
It's a tremendous health benefit for people who really need it. And Junfeng Zhang, who is professor at Global and Environmental Health at Duke University, says, pharmaceutical companies have spent large amounts of money to develop drugs that can work on lower airways, but they're very expensive. Our results show that using an air purifier to reduce the exposure of lower airways to pollutants could help asthmatic children breathe easier without costly drugs. You just clean the air and they breathe good and get healthy.
And given that we should all be focusing on preventative medicine as like a priority, because prevention is better than cure is an adage for a reason, it's a much less involved way of managing the condition than other treatments like taking medication regularly. And it's a thing with chronic illnesses that the quality of your treatment is very reliant on the patient doing things, and some patients are not good at doing the stuff that they need to do.
You know who's really bad at sticking to guidelines? Children. Like these ones.
I mean, also me.
Also.
An adult.
Also.
So conditions that are heavily reliant on patients managing their own healthcare needs, taking the effort out of that by making it about keeping your air filter up to date and functioning could make a vast, vast difference to lots of people who are struggling because they have trouble with forming the habit of taking their medication or managing their executive function well enough to refill their prescription regularly.
Or aren't from a family or position where they can afford the costly and expensive drugs that Professor Zhang pointed out had failed to work so far, compared to a box that sits in the corner of the room, goes whir, and makes you much better than you were.
Highlighting that this is a study based in America where people do have to pay for all of their drugs.
And we come back to that economic thing again, don't we?
But apparently it's much cheaper to just let people die. I don't believe it.
Let's move on to some happier health news.
Well, not happier, but health news that's more about things that you absolutely cannot help.
Yeah.
You, dear listener, have a spine in your body.
So we've heard.
It is very common for people to have pain in their spine. Some of these are because of having a sedentary job, having a very physical job. Hate how that's a thing. Both ends of the spectrum an issue. Some of it might just be because you evolved from a quadrupedal ape and your vertebrae are a funny shape.
Which is a science factoid, an anecdote that I have heard so much over my life that we have evolved almost too quickly from walking around on all fours or knuckling along like cartoon cavemen to be upright, to be having desk jobs, and that's why we have back pain. And yeah, that's kind of how we have a lot of back pain in the human species, is because of that reason that I thought was sorted in like 1962 or whatever.
But this has looked very specifically at the mechanics that cause that, as opposed to just going, oh, well, this isn't really a spine that's designed for being in that position. They've compared lumbar vertebrae of humans and great apes. They have compared lumbar vertebrae of humans with healthy backs to humans suffering from spondylolysis, which is a sort of stress fracture, a condition that happens in humans but not great apes, and found that people who have spondylolysis have vertebrae that are more wedge-shaped, with the front taller than the back, among other differences. In previous research, they compared humans with intervertebral disc hernias to modern chimpanzees and compared those vertebrae. Basically, they've created a bell curve of spines that are a lot like chimpanzee spines, very likely to have herniated discs, spines that are very much not like chimpanzee spines, very likely to get spondylolysis, and then the happy middle ground of people whose backs mostly seem to work. And essentially, this is a selection pressure in action, isn't it?
People who are going to be affected by this are probably going to be able to pass on their genetics.
Yeah, it would stop you breeding if we were still likely to be eaten by saber-toothed cats. But because we moved on from that phase of our existence as a species really fairly quickly, that's probably why, I mean, in combination with us just being a very young species, this may be why some of us have sad spines.
Well, there you have it. A whole bevy of things that you may look back on now and think, yeah, no, I knew that one. But you have the number, which is the important thing. You have the number now to say, yes, it is a 3.3% increase of flooding if you pave over an entire city, or here's the right shape for a spine to be for most of the time. It's a fact of the scientific method that sometimes you gotta check.
It literally is a fact of the scientific method that you check. Even if there's something that you think you know, you check, and then you check again. And then you check from a different direction in case the thing you thought you knew from the first two times of checking was actually caused by something else. And then you get your mate to check it in a different country.
So what you and your mates in different countries should do is check our Patreon page, patreon.com/EurekaNerd, and you can also find us on social media at EurekaNerdcast on Twitter and /EurekaNerd on Facebook. And genuinely, please do tell your friends about us, spread the word, share the news of all these factoids and anecdotes, which are true, and that you can now prove with science. Also, any rates and reviews on whatever podcast platform you're using would be greatly appreciated too.
In other news, meat is no ordinary solid. Specifically, in order to make accurate computer models of it, you have to treat it as a fluid-saturated matrix of elastic proteins, which, like, yeah, that's what it is, guys.
And lastly, from the University of Texas at Arlington, in medical emergencies, people don't listen to facts. They follow their guts. Which is possibly the worst news we could leave you with at the end of this show in the middle of this pandemic.
Hopefully it's going to be used to help craft messages that people are more likely to listen to. Things that appeal to their emotions more than logic.
You'll stay safe out there. But until next time, that's bye-bye from me.
And goodbye from me. This podcast is brought to you by the Stimulus Network.